You're listening to the Climbing the Charts podcast, where we believe engagement and connection with your city and its surroundings are the bedrock of intrinsic value, as well as professional development.
We're your hosts, Brandon Miller and Angie Lallis, serial entrepreneurs, real estate attorneys, and authors. We will explore themes such as personal and professional development, the importance of place and place making, and how to live more intentionally each day with experts, shakers, and makers. We want to ensure you get the most out of your personal pilgrimage and professional journey.
Listen in for inspirational stories, cautionary tales, and humorous accounts as we interview folks about their journey in effecting change or making a difference in their pocket of the world. And now we, your podcasting Sherpas, are excited to have you join us as we begin this exploration together. This is the Climbing the Charts podcast. Welcome to the Climbing the Charts podcast. I'm Angie Lallis, and I'm here with my co-host, Brandon Miller.
Today, we are honored and very excited to have Brian Bivens joining us on Climbing the Charts. Brian is a partner with Bivens & Associates and one of the most sought-after lobbyists and legislative consultants here in our great state of Tennessee. Brian's been working the halls of the legislature for over 20 years, having joined his father and brother after graduating from the University of Tennessee at Knoxville. Brian came to the business of politics and lobbying naturally as the son of Steve D. Bivens, who represented District 24, which we'll talk about a little bit, which is mostly Bradley County in the 91st through 97th General Assemblies. A political career, give you some dates spanning from 1978 to 1992, which included service as the House Majority Whip from 81 to 84 and the Speaker Pro Tempore of the 94th General Assembly. Brian continues in the best traditions of his father with a finger on the political pulse, and he's very active in civic life, including serving on the board of Friends of Warner Parks, the Governor's H2O Initiative, and also offers his policy expertise to organizations such as Second Harvest Food Bank of Tennessee. An enthusiast of the great outdoors, he is married with three children and resides here in Nashville.
Welcome to the show, Ryan.
All right. Thank you for the introduction.
So, Brian, I've been interested. Last session, we had Representatives Bain and Warner on to kind of give a little bit of a preview of the upcoming session. And then as I learned a little bit more, I thought it'd be great, actually, to have a lobbyist on, because it's kind of your job is to, I think, study and know what's coming up and what we can expect. And so I asked around and finally was pointed to you, and then found out later that you and Brandon actually went to high school together.
Yeah.
So wild.
Yeah, very, very small world.
In Bradley County in Cleveland, Tennessee.
Cleveland, Tennessee. Shout out to the Blue Raiders.
That's right. Let's go.
Yeah. So when Brandon was in high school, did you notice him like wearing a long black trench coat or a bicycle helmet? Or did you notice him at all?
Oh, no, for sure. He was definitely one of the smartest guys in the school. Yeah, you could tell he was going somewhere.
Bike helmet?
No bike helmet, no trench coat. Definitely just kind of maybe dressed like he is now. A little overdressed for high school.
We're probably preppy in high school.
I love
probably
that.
More preppy than now.
A little overdressed.
Because this is Music City, we like to start this out with an easy one. In the words of Chris Stapleton, what are you listening to?
Chris Stapleton. Yeah. Red Clay Strays. Oh, yeah. Taylor Swift. My daughter, I'm a big Swiftie. So let's see what else is
did you go to the show, Brian?
We did go to the show. We crushed the show. It was amazing. And I'm not afraid to admit it was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. I've seen music all over the country. So Zach Bryan, Morgan Wallen, Dead & Company, Wu-Tang Clan. That's what's on my list right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of all over the place, you know.
Did you have a Wu-Tang for president?
Well, no, so I was showing those signs around town to my middle son, because I was trying to explain it to him. They're basketball players, so they think they like rap, so we listen to them. I'm trying to educate them on, you know, a lot of different genres of music or whatever, and then I started pointing out a few of those signs in town, and he was like, who are they? And I'm like, that's how we started listening to them. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So in going over your bio, it's clear that your family and your father in particular had a big influence on your eventual career. But how did you kind of get to this path? Did you know at an early age you were going to be involved in some way in politics, or just show up?
Total opposite, actually. My brother, I have an older brother that I work with. He was always into politics, loved politics, wanted to be a lobbyist. He worked in D.C. He was a political science major at UT.
Michael.
Mike. Yeah, Michael. Dad, I mean, actually, he got started lobbying in 1992, when he got beat, there was a terrible traffic accident on I-75 north of Cleveland going towards Knoxville. It was all in the fog. It was the largest accident in the country. And he was really close to Dan McWhorter, who had just become governor. And there's a paper company there called Bowater, and they have all these cooling ponds, and they were trying to blame the fog on the cooling ponds. And so, like, they hired him to come to Nashville to sort of help lobby, resolve the situation, figure it out for both ends. So that's how our firm got started. At that point, my dad became a lobbyist, which never thought would happen, right? Years later, my brother had worked in DC, and then he was in Knoxville working for UPS, and he was like, I want to get out of here. I want to go to Nashville, blah, blah, blah. I'm in college, having a good time. You know, I grew up as my dad as a legislator from 2 until I was 18. So it was somewhat annoying to me. I felt like I needed to just, you know, keep straight and not get in trouble and, you know, do all those good things, which looking back, it made me a better person. But anyway.
Through college?
No, not at all. Yeah, no. So yeah, so I get to college. I don't even think about politics. Dad's started a lobby. That's great. You know, whatever. Then my brother comes over. And then when I'm graduating, I take a year off. When I graduate from Knoxville, I'm like, not real sure what I want to do. And they had grown the business a little bit. And my dad was like, hey, why don't you come to Nashville and see if you like it? And for me, the attraction was I was in my 20s. When they were in session, they were in session. When they were out of session, I could do kind of what I wanted to.
Yeah.
I didn't have to run a business. I didn't have to manage anybody. Like, dad was doing all that, right? And so at that point, it was like, it was the free time, you know, the kind of the freedom after that attracted me. But as with any job, things got easier and better. And, you know, we really started gelling as a team and started picking up some other big clients. And then...
And are you really going to be like the evil son that doesn't want anything to do with dad and your brother?
Well, you know, looking back, it's definitely probably the best thing ever for all of us to work together. And I mean, as a father myself, I can't imagine how proud, you know, he was during most of all of that. And he retired during COVID. He just... 6'8". He liked to shake hands and say, what's up? He didn't want to do
his dad was
Zoom.
Very tall. I think I first met him in junior high when he came and gave like a talk for like a, I don't know, some sort of civics class.
Makes sense.
Bradley.
Yeah.
And so you've been doing this now for how many years?
99 is when I came down.
25 so, years.
Yeah. This will be my 25th session, which is crazy.
Wild.
To think about.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to ask you this later, but how has, so I'll just use the 113th General Assembly since we haven't really gotten into this one yet, but how does the political climate that you've seen in like the last session compare to what you've seen through the years? Because I think there's a lot of times where we get like, oh, wow, this is like crazy, the supermajority and all this stuff. But I wonder if it's just like kind of a, you know, maybe a new version, but the same thing, or if it seems really different.
It's very, really different. Yeah. And it's kind of been trending a little bit that way, but like last session was terrible. No one liked it. You know, people didn't want to hear the stuff on the floor. You didn't want to hear the protesters and no offense to anyone. I mean, you're always open to people's house, but like it drastically changed the way people did business in the Capitol. Like I would love to go to the Capitol on Monday nights when the Senate and the House members were coming in and hang out there and see everybody and kind of talk to them about what's the week going to look like or blah, 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 blah. I probably didn't set foot in the Capitol 3 days last year just because the anger, the angst, there's 30 state troopers, everyone's screaming. Like it's disrupting the whole flow of them doing their business. And so the wasted time on the floor, the you know, the rules and like, you know, I'm not saying the rules are a bad thing. I'm just saying like it just changed the whole dynamic completely and it just made it very partisan and people were mad and it's just a lot different. And everyone says, hey, that's a lot different than when I started. Yes, it was. But I mean, it is significantly different to be in the Capitol than it was 2 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever.
We were talking to Representative Love about it and you're just talking about how you try to stay on the issue and try to get business done, right? And I feel like last session, at least from what I saw, it looked like there became a lot of personal attacks that's recorded for everyone to see that were really fairly nasty. I think Representative Love's point was, sometimes I think what people forget is these are humans too, most of which are traveling, leaving their families for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at least 3 nights out of the week. Right. And so, you know, when they already are maybe on edge from just a human life event, and then they're coming into a level of hatred when probably most of them signed up to serve for we want to help reasons.
Right.
That's pretty tough.
I agree. No, yeah, it's, you know, growing up in it, I respect how hard it is. They do. They leave their families. They leave their jobs. They go to Nashville. They have to do this. And then they have to come back and they go to chili suppers and breakfast in the morning. And they're just, it's, and then they don't get paid to do it. Right. They barely get paid any money. They don't have any staff. It's kind of a thankless job. But what they're doing, that helps me respect each one of them because I know how hard it is growing up in it, I think. But at the same time, you know, it's very, state government is very, a very important job. I mean, you know, the federal government stuff is what's spinning all the political stuff on Twitter or whatever else. But in reality, that none of that matters. Mm-hmm. It's all state and local, right? That's where the real impact on your life is.
It's where the real impact on your life is. But I will say, I feel like the rhetoric that comes top down is just, it's difficult to shake.
It is. No, it is. I agree 100%. DC is a disaster.
Yeah.
So we'll bring this back in time a little bit. I think you kind of hit on some of these things, Brian. This is super interesting. So obviously we grew up in Cleveland, Tennessee, which is, I think, known for a lot of things, check cashing, churches, Church of God. But, you know, now it's circa 2025. Bradley County is very red Trump country. You know, it may boast the highest percentage of churches per acre in the South. I don't know anywhere else that has more churches.
Actually, I pulled something on this when I read it. So this is a little bit dated. It was like, I can't remember, 2017 maybe, but it was on Lifeway's site, I think. And it said that Chattanooga, which, you know, is essentially Bradley County, had 59% of, they were measuring Bible-minded cities. So 59% of Chattanoogans at the time were churchgoers, which the overall country at the time was like 38%, meaning that they had attended a service in the past 7 days. And then there was a 43% that were considered unchurched, haven't attended in the past 6 months. So
yeah,
sort of backs
so
you up.
Bradley County is way beating Hamilton County on the church front. But, you know, big picture, though, you know, your father was I think mind-bending to think now, you know, he was a Democrat in District 24. You should kind of his, you know, relationship with Ned McWhorter, who was obviously a Democratic governor. And your dad had, you know, long career. We talked about kind of the timeline. How do you think about the fact that we had a Democrat in Bradley County, you know, basically for 20 years, you know, until the early 90s? Is that even a possible thought now? And if not, what's changed from your perspective, having grown up in that?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. I mean, yeah, before Williamson County really existed, Bradley County was definitely the most conservative district in the state. I always thought that way. I think my dad was a state legislator because he had a big family and he was a big recognizable figure and he was a passionate, caring person. And I don't ever remember him saying anything about a Democrat or a Republican. Literally, like my whole life, it was never about, the stories were never about I was out with these Republicans or I was working with this guy or whatever it was. I mean, he knew, you know, all the guys that were representatives close to us. I mean, they were all tight and they were Republican. And, you know, I had a legislator who recently retired, but who did serve with my dad and came back. And he was like, you know, Brian, today your dad would be what they would say would be a moderate or a country club Republican, just the way he, you know, the way he led or the way he. So yeah, he was elected as a Democrat for sure. And it is strange, but could that ever happen again? Absolutely not. Not at all. Like that's, I mean, it was just a part of the times. You campaign different, you know what I mean? Like you had to get out and see people and do things and engage in the community. And I just, it's, you can, you don't have to be that engaged anymore. I think it's a different style of campaign.
That probably just also says a lot about the rise of labels. I think, and I was thinking back and, you know, I think, you know, even back in high school, you know, I think everybody was, we had a lot of friends that were very into following politics. Like I couldn't remember, like if you had asked me, was your dad a Republican or a Democrat? I wouldn't know. I didn't know until I looked it up, which I should know, but that does say a lot, just how much less the party label, you know, mattered. So obviously things have changed in the last 20 years where the party labels are just much more visible. And even we talked about at the school board level in Tennessee, you know, before we had basically nonpartisan school board elections. Now if you're a school board nominee or your candidate, you're an R or a D or an I.
I think too, though, what's dangerous about that is that I mean, to your point, and you're talking about your dad, I think there are lots of guys probably on the right or the left, which you could really just, you hear over and over, we need to be like in the middle. And a lot of those guys, I think, are. They're not these like extreme positions. And so when we did the last one with David French, you know, talking about how he's like, it wasn't about the label for me when, you know, it was about the values. So I was a Reagan, Carter, Republican. And he's like, but then when Trump came down the escalator, those values didn't match my values. And so I'm like, wait, like what's more important, the label or the actual, you know, kind of the system of belief below it? But if you're in politics, how do you shift? If your party shifts so far, right, it's not like you can just be like, okay, well, now I'm an independent, because the labels matter.
Yeah, if you're an independent, you have no chance in Tennessee. Zero.
No, I hear you.
I guess the big question is, how much of that do you think is kind of coming down from federal politics, kind of infecting the state? Or do you think it's kind of not related? It's just part of the overall partisanization of politics.
I don't know why we are where we are, but I can tell you what I remember of how through my job. So when Beth Harwell became speaker, I felt like it was less partisan then than it is now.